think what will be very important, now let me first welcome, then we can introduce, but I'm sure the people in the department know the members. I just want to look at the agenda before I welcome any person. Today's agenda speaks to a briefing by the Department of Basic Education on basic education laws, and we're going to have that briefing now. Then the consideration of outstanding submissions on quality education and access to education. And I'd like to inform the committee that we have 2 minutes we sent out to each committee member. The one is on the meeting of the 19th of January, and then the other is on the report of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education on the official release of the National Senior Certificate results. And that we'll do on our own once we excuse the department. Is there anything that any member would like to put onto the agenda? Mr. Smiles spoke earlier to me. Mr. Honourable Smiles?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. Chairperson, I would like to, as a matter of public importance, put on the agenda the non-appointment of temporary teachers in the Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chair. Then secondly, maybe, is it, do we correct, Chair?
Not yet.
Not yet?
We will continue with the meeting.
Thank you.
The only thing that we won't do, we won't start any discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Wilmot, I see your hands were up.
No, that's fine. I had a question about whether we caught it and what the procedure is from here.
As I said, we'll continue. In my opening remarks, I'd like to welcome the members of the Portfolio Committee on Education and the department to this meeting. I'd like to extend a warm hand of welcome to the DG of the department. We did not expect you this afternoon, but we're quite happy to have you here, because as you have seen, there are things, you know, at the end too, that we will be discussing, and would like to have a report, you know, just a report from you. When it comes to the briefing on the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, now this afternoon, I would like the department to give us just a short briefing on this amendment. And then I also would like to ask the department to tell us why this amendment. And before we start, I think it will be necessary just for the department, or do the members want to introduce themselves? Because I see new members in the department here. Let's have the members introducing themselves with our officials, they will go to the department. Fine, you can start, Honourable Dudley. You can start with yourself.
Thank you. Carolyn Dudley, African Christian Democratic Party and member of this committee.
Thank you, Anne Lemda, member of the committee.
Ntopile Khayaro, member of the committee. Walmart James, member of the committee, and we are Corey, by the way.
Donald Smart, member of the committee. Thank you.
Chair, that's the point we wanted to clarify as well, that we do from a crowd. But I'm silent, Makubele, a member of the committee.
I think we were quorum all along. I'd like to know why the DA mislead me. Thank you.
Last question.
as my two advisors on the other side. You introduce yourself.
Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the committee.
Rwan Mahata, researcher for the committee.
Thank you, the department.
Bobby Subrayan, Director General, Department of Basic Education.
Vivian Carlson, DDG.
Marie Vishana Ramaphosa, Department of Basic Education.
I'm Randall van den Jeffer, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer of Minister Angie Motshekga.
My name is Charles Lebawa, Basic Education. I'm serving within the Legislative Services. Alan Small from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors.
Good afternoon, Olivia Cyprus, Committee Assistant.
Papa Jobane, NYDA. Good afternoon, Christian Sissers, Textbook Development Institute.
Hello, my name is Kirsten Sey, I'm from PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thanks so much for the introduction. Now each and everyone knows each other. Dimitri, will you tell us, you know, who's going to speak, or will you start with the introduction of this amendment? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and this is the first meeting that I'm attending after your appointment. May I take the opportunity to wish you everything of the best regarding your stewardship of the committee. I wish you do well, and we do have our support all the time. Thank you very much for this opportunity, ma'am. You indicated that you wanted a brief presentation, which is said one that's both brief, but comprehensive enough to explain all the amendments that we have in this amendment bill. The purpose of the bill is as follows. Firstly, it brings about changes or amendments to the following legislation, which collectively constitute the legislative body of the basic education system, that the South African Schools Act of 1996, commonly referred to as SASA, the National Education Policy Act of 1996, commonly known as the NEPA, the Employment of Educators Act of 1998, commonly known as the EEA, the South African Council for Educators Act of 2000, the SEC Act, and finally, the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act of 2001, commonly referred to as the GENFETWA Act. The bill contains both technical and substantive amendments, and its main purpose, Madam Chair, honourable members, is to align the above legislative framework with the new dispensation, on the one hand, that came about during 1999, following the split of the department, and then also to update the legislation in terms of new developments that have happened since the last amendment. The Bella Bill was published in the Government Gazette number 32794 of 9 December 2009 to invite public comment. The bill addresses both technical and other substantive issues in order to provide greater clarity with regard to existing provisions in the legislature. And again, to repeat, it's about the split of the department, but also where certain provisions of the legislation were unclear. We thought, based on hindsight now, to clarify that even further through the amendment. It provides technical authority for practices currently in existence for public schools. The closing date for submission of public comments is February 2010. However, owing to the small number of comments received, the closing date was extended to 28 February 2010 in order to give everyone an opportunity to have their say on the matter. The 15 comments received from individuals and stakeholders so far have been evaluated and incorporated into the bill based on the merit of the submission. The Bella Bill was presented to Cabinet Committee meeting of 27 July 2010. Honourable Chairperson, that constitutes the background to the presentation, we now go into giving you a briefing on clause by clause amendments that have been effected through the law. I'll now hand over to Mr.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present this bill to the Portfolio Committee. I will then go ahead with a clause-by-clause exposition of the bill. And I will, when necessary, deal with some of the clauses in group. The first slide deals with clauses 1 to 3. These clauses are all technical amendments, and it was necessitated by the Stiftinger Department of Education, the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education and Training, and it contains technical amendments in the NEPA Act as well as the South African Schools Act, and it amends terms by the Director General, where it was previously in the South African Schools Act, Director General of Education. We now amend that specific term to read the Director General of Basic Education. And the same goes for Minister. We also amended the term Minister to now read it Minister of Basic Education. These are all related to the Swift in the Department. Then I will go to Clause 4. Clause also contains technical amendments to the following definitions: the definition of minister, as well as the insertion of the definition of parent. That definition was necessitated by a High Court case in Cape Town that went to the Supreme Court of Appeal, where there was a bit of uncertainty on the term parent. We've made it very clear in the legislation that parents entails both biological and adoptive parents. And that is just to make it very clear in the legislation. Furthermore, there's also insertion of the definition of loan. There was also quite a bit of uncertainty with schools of what is meant by loan. We're just defining it in the legislation to make it quite clear what is meant by that term. Then furthermore, we also meant section 5A of SACA to provide for a process in which the Minister of Basic Education consult with the Minister of Finance before prescribing regulations on management norms and standards to school infrastructure. This is also just to bring it in line with the Public Finance Management Act just to bring up also certainty on that aspect. Then the following amendment is Clause 6. This is an amendment that was brought about as a result of a court case in Durban. I don't remember if you recall, there was this case in the Equality Court in KZN, where this parent took that particular school to the Equality Court, and it was on the basis that there was unfair discrimination against this particular parent because isiZulu was offered at a very lower level as the other languages. Now this is just a provision just to make it quite clear that there should not be any unfair discrimination where schools exercise their curriculum choices in terms of Section 21 of South African Schools Act. This has got nothing to do with the language of instruction, it's just the curriculum offerings in terms of that particular section. Then the next clause is Clause 7. This is an amendment of Section 9 of the South African Schools Act. And this is also a bit of a technical amendment, and it's just to also empowering the MSC to ensure that a suitable sanction is imposed against a learner after appeal has been upheld in terms of Section 9.4. Members will recall that only the head of the department has authority in terms of SASA to expel a learner. Now, there can be a further appeal then to the MEC after that decision of the head of the department. Now, it wasn't clear quite in the legislation what whether the MEC can overturn that decision, or whether he can substitute that decision of the head of the department with his own. We're just making it, giving him that authority to impose a suitable sanction after he or she overruled the appeal of the head of the department. Then the next one is clause 8. This is just to introduce a new category of school, and it's a school with a specialized focus on talent, including art, sport, and creative art. And then the minister must determine the norms and standards for the funding of these particular schools. The next one is clause 9. This one, in terms of this clause, the principal as a delegate by the head of the department is given extended financial responsibility to take part both in financial and executive committees, and this serves to protect school money and protect property against abuse of governing bodies. This is just to give the principal a bigger say in the running of the school, in the financial affairs of the school, and so on. Then the next one is clause 10. In this particular clause, we just empower the head of the department to identify governing body associations or other appropriate training authority for the purpose of training governing bodies and building their capacity. So this will just give him that discretion. This doesn't mean that the department abdicates the responsibility of capacitating governing bodies, but it just gives the head of department an extra option in legislation to make use of governing body associations to do training. And the next one is clause 11. This is an insertion in the South African Schools Act, and it provides for, and it just outlaws all political activities in school during school time. This doesn't mean that after school time there cannot be political activities, just to protect the school time and just to outlaw that kind of activity during school time. And the next clause is clause 12. This is an amendment to section 36. This is also to allow the governing body to enter into loan or overdraft agreement with the written approval of the MSC, with the concurrence of the MSC responsible for finance in the province. This is again just to bring that provision in line with the Public Finance Management Act, and just to ensure that the MSC or finance is consulted in all financial matters. Then the next clause is clause 13. This is also just a technical amendment, and this just allows the MEC to identify additional no-fee schools after the particular MEC had submitted the list to the Minister for publication in the Gazette. and the next clause is clause 14. This is an amendment that was brought about by a case in the Supreme Court of Appeal. There was a bit of uncertainty on whether the state is liable for any contractual or intellectual matters of a school, and this is just to make it plainly clear that the state liability in terms of Section 60 is for both contractual and intellectual liability. The next grouping deals with clauses 15 to 18. These are all, again, technical amendments to the Employment of Educators Act, as well as the Genfekwa Act, and this is just also brought about by the split in the department, again, just to amend the terms in the dealing with the split in the department. And the next clauses deals with the FACE Act. These clauses deal with amendment of faith in order to provide greater clarity in relation to the promotion of in-service training. And these clauses provide that faith must promote in-service training for educators at the request of the Department of Basic Education or Provincial Education Department. The next clause is clause 21. And that one deals with technical amendment of the Federal Act to adjust the context of Department of Education, Director General and Minister. And then the last clause is just the savings clause. Basically that clause just provides that in terms of the proclamation that was announced by the President when the Department of Education was split, this bill does not take away any of the powers allocated to the Minister of Higher Education and Training in that proclamation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beckett. I'd like to welcome the members that came into the meeting, and I'd like to ask the members if there's any clarity on this briefing that has been given to us by the department. Thank you. You know I struggle with your surname.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not going to pronounce it. Mr. Smiles, I'm putting you out of my meeting. Eh? I didn't ask you to show, tell me what the person's surname is.
Okay. I would prefer to, in future, I would use my name. It should be much simpler. But we'll discuss it later. I just want to get some clarity on the...
Your mic, please.
Pardon?
Turn your mic.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was loud enough. The concept of the learner as against a student, I understand it, but I just want some small clarity on, you know, people who are not in basic education, but who, in my mind, would not really qualify to be called students like those who are in the university. And I'm referring here to people in the FET colleges, because you have people who have just passed grade 9, and they are in the FET college. Are you going to call them students, or are you going to refer to them as learners? I know it overlaps. It may not really be your baby, but just for my understanding.
Thanks, Jefferson. my clarity is on page 7, where on clause 9 it says the delegated authority to the principal. I'm wondering if is it possible that we can at least be given a background as to what informs this amendment, because I would know of certain situations where how strict the SGB is and how involved the SGB is helps in managing the finances of the schools. And in this particular instance, if there is no background that is given that justifies as into what informs this drastic amendment that is changed, because even though it further down it goes to say that the principal would play an advisory role and the governing body decides whether to take the advice or not, but the fact that the first paragraph is there and is the principal will be using that paragraph, because you must understand that this is a piece of legislation where the principal will say, no, you are there as a governing body just to advise me. At the end of the day, the legislation gives me the powers to take decisions, and it's only on matters that relate to finance, so unless I'm reading it wrongly. So I wonder if it's possible that we could be enlightened and be given a background that informs the amendment, in particular to clause 9. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Tansha Mponishana. Yeah.
Three clauses, clause 8, yes, the third category of schools. I'm just thinking of inclusive education. if we have got this category, will that also embrace that concept? That's one. And then clause 11, where you talk about the prohibition of holding of political activities within the premises of a school. If you could explain more on what you mean by political activity. When you explain, I'll give an example, but I'll wait for that explanation. And also clause 13, it interests me to know that the department is saying that provinces up to now have been identifying no-fee schools, but they've been doing this without any statutory authority. What does that actually mean? Can anyone reverse those schools that have been identified as no-fee schools? What's the meaning here? Thanks.
Makubele, thank you. On the bench.
Thanks, Chair. It would relate to clause 6. And I'm quite conscious that it referred to a specific case why we had to emphasize this issue, which will ultimately as well relate to issues of transformation. But I'm saying so far, as the government or the country were unable to offer most of the subjects that learners have to receive in their indigenous languages, even if that was going to mean that it's a first additional language. And there's also the right of the SGBs to as well decide on what should happen. Now, in some instances, it may be very difficult to understand whether this is unfair discrimination or not, considering whatever circumstances obtaining at that specific school. But all I wanted to hear, Chair, is for the department just to clarify the implications of that, if we have been able to look at the circumstances and taking audit in the entire country, as to what were the implications of that case, to the extent that now that we have inserted that in the Act, what will it necessarily mean? Are we going to be able to equal the challenge as will be presented by even the clause? And I'm not saying there's any problem with the clause per se. Thanks. And I'm part of the department, as you might have noted.
On Kuchina, and then Kosana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being late. Mine will be on clause 9 versus clause, and also not versus, and also clause 12. Clause 9, Honorable Dai talked about it, the powers that should be given to the principals. And most of the time, given the fact that you know the status of most of our governing bodies, some of them can know, what can I say? But I don't want to put it that way. But yes, given the fact that we find that most of our governing bodies are really, even if they are trained, they don't understand well what is their role, and that is one of the gaps that we have on the governing bodies. Then when you go, okay, clause 9 is giving the principal those extra, those extended financial responsibilities, and I'm not against that, but I foresee where the governing body is of the nature that I've just talked about. If ever now the principals are given those extra financial responsibilities, what is it that we can say around it? But more on top of that, go to clause 12, where the governing bodies can apply for those overdrafts and the approval of the MECs and the HODs, as to say, really, where can we close the gaps, where we can find that? Because we wanted the powers there were for the principals to protect the governing bodies from abusing their powers on financial, to protect the school monies. And now we find in that clause giving those powers to these governing bodies to apply for these overdraft agreements, which are going to be extended, the responsibilities are again extended to the principal, who is going to report more on the usage of those finances, as to say, how can we close the gap where we see the governing bodies being used or being abused just because they are not, they don't understand some of the things around these whole issues of finances. And because, as we say, we need to guard against the school money being wasted. So I think it's for us here to make sure that whatever bill that you are passing, but we are closing the gaps where we can see the these monies being abused in one way or the other. Thank you, Chair.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Let me start by apologizing for arriving late, as I've indicated to the well at a time from home, and I'll just join you. Chairperson, on the issue of a principal being an advisory person to SGB on financial matters, I just want to get a clarity, Chairperson. The difference between the current status of the principal as advisory body and the one that we are proposing. Because as we are talking, the principals are advisory, in fact, are advising the SGBs on financial matters. Now I just want to get the clarity. What will be the difference between the current one and the one that we are proposing? And also, when you check the responsibilities of the two, the principal and the SGB, is it going to be normal or something that will make the SGB running, or there will be conflicting somewhere else? I just want to get a clarity. Secondly, Chairperson, the identification of the governing body association or other appropriate training authority to train the governing bodies. We do have those processes now at different departments, whereby some departmental officials being trained to train those SGPs. I just want to check with the department, what will be the difference between those will be tendering as a company to execute this duty and the officials that we are having who are responsible to train those SGPs at the present moment. Thirdly, I understand that the SGPs should be given powers to enter into a loan with some different institutions, but with the recommendation of the MECs, the minister, as is indicated here. My fear that I want maybe the department to alleviate or to explain on is the reimbursement of those funds, because the schools are not having financial muscles the place where they can get money in order to reimburse those loans that they will be entered with those institutions. And if they enter into an agreement with those institutions, who will be responsible for reimbursement? Is it the department or is the school, because the school doesn't have funds or any source of generating of funds. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for that. My question to the department will be on Clause 8. I just want you to explain Clause 8 fully to us, because I'm thinking on how will it affect schools that already have this within their, you know, within their syllabus at school. Then when it comes to the clause on the loan, is it according to the PFMA? Because I'm from the Eastern Cape, and I think we could not make, as a government, we couldn't, you know, borrow money. So how do it fit into the PFMA and, you know, that deals with, when it comes to dealing with provinces? Then there was another question, wait, I'll ask a question last, because I want to speak to MEC and ministers that we have in different provinces. Thank you. Daydream, sorry, Mr. Beekers, you may answer the questions.
I'll ask my colleagues also to assist. I don't know if DG wants to start off or whether I should. My colleagues must be here to also answer if they so wish. I'll start with the first question. That was one on the clarity of learner and student. And I think that one refers to clause 3 of the National Education Policy Act. We've taken out the word student there because that's generally used within the higher education sector. So this particular clause was also just to align this particular amendment with a split in the department, and that's why the term student was taken out, because you will recall that we've also in the National Education Policy Act, where we define education institution, we've taken out the further or higher education other than a university. That whole part was taken out because that is that does not fall within the ambit of the Department of Basic Education. So these are all just terms just to align the bill, to make provision for the split in the department. The next clause, the next question is clarity with regard to clause 9. And the issue is there with regard to the powers of the principal. The principal is not taking the powers away from the governing body. The governing body will still have powers to decide on the financial matters of the school. What we're doing, the purpose of this clause is just, and it starts off with assist. The purpose of this is not for the principal to have the decision-making power in the financial affairs, but just to assist the governing body in financial matters, because in many instances you will find that principals will not take responsibility for any financial issues regarding the school, and they will say, no, this is not my function, this is a matter that belongs to the governing body. They have the power in terms of Schools Act to over the financial affairs of the school. So this is just bringing the principal into the decision-making process and that he be part of that decision-making process regarding the financial affairs of the school. Then the next one deals with clause 11. The next question is the clause 11 regarding the political prohibition of political activities during school time. Does it include clause 8?
Yeah,
I apologize. Clause 8 deals with the introduction of The third category of school that deals with specialized focus on talent, including sports, performing arts, and the question was, does it include inclusive education? You will see that the Roman Bullet 2, that one deals with public schools for learners with special education needs. So that one will speak to that one of inclusive education. So it did not take out the previous categories or the existing categories in South African schools, but just add the third one, Roman Bullet 3, that just deals with specialized focus on talent. And I think there was also then a question on by the same honourable member on clause 11 that deals with the prohibition of political activities during the school time. And the question is what is meant about the political activities. We did not in the bill we've been conscious not to discard all political activities. So you'll see that first sentence there, the party political activities contemplated in subsection 1 include but are not limited to campaigning, conduct of rallies, distribution of pamphlets and flyers, and the hanging or putting up of posters and banners. So the term is broad and it encompasses all political activities. However, there is a specific exclusion and these deals with the political, because the concept is so wide, one could conceivably, if you have a poster of maybe Nelson Mandela in a classroom, or other political leader, yes, conceive that as political activities. But I think the fourth one deals with political activities related to curriculum at the school, that is not affected by this particular clause. Some of my colleagues also
can
follow up. Because about school premises, you're referring during school time or school premises at any other time. During school hours. Oh, that's a relief.
Can I follow up on that as well?
I'll allow you, thanks.
Obviously, the union activity wouldn't, from the way you're reading it, fall into that. Now, there was a sense when we were facing hiccup last year that there should be some kind of regulation restricting just any kind of activity going on within school hours, or at the very least, principals being involved. So now that obviously doesn't cover it in any way, and there doesn't seem to be anything that does. So have we just chickened out of attempting to do anything there?
You're quite correct. This doesn't cover union activities. It's party political.
It seems like a golden opportunity to put something in there in terms of, because that's what we were really more concerned about last year. It wasn't actually political activity, it was union activity, even by the headmaster on school premises in school.
Thanks, Honourable Dudley. Are you going to answer to that?
Thank you very much. That's noted. I think that's a very good suggestion. I don't have the power to.
The SG?
Thank you, ma'am. DG. yeah, sounds like this. You know, when you said you're happy I'm here, I thought maybe I shouldn't have come to this presentation. But the questions around union activity. Obviously, it's not covered in the ambit of political activity because it falls within labor law and it falls within the Employment of Educators Act, more broadly speaking. And, of course, it falls within collective agreements that we have. And if you put all those together, you'll be able to assess what unions can and can't do. Currently, principals have a right to join unions and participate in union activities within the provisions. So if we're saying that we want to look at a special dispensation for principals, that's something we should look at as well.
The other issue is that very often when one looks at the activities one seeks to deal with, many of them fall outside of the provisions currently. So no provisions allows any action which causes damage to property or deprives the rights of learners and so forth. And there is legislation that one can use to deal with that, including criminal legislation and so forth. So the question is, in those areas, one can't specifically legislate there when there are other statutes that provide for addressing those issues. So I think we'll have to open up a discussion on the question of principles itself. But as far as union activities are concerned, those are quite strictly regulated in terms of the time teachers can take to attend to activities, what kind of actions can be taken, and the question of the rights of the child being paramount within making those decisions as well. The question is, very often in a period of intense strike, those provisions themselves are not applied. And the question is, how does one ensure that those things are applied as well?
Thank you. Satisfied, Honorable Dudley?
Satisfied with the practice.
Thanks for that. You noted, Ika Wallace. Thank you. You may continue, Mr. Biakas.
Thank you very much. I'll ask my colleague just to deal with the other questions. Mr. Ramaphosa.
Can your mic, please?
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I want to address the question on the issue of languages as captured in Clause 6 of the Bill. The Honourable Member raised the question about whether the department will be able to offer as a medium of instruction programs in all languages. But the purpose of this amendment is not to deal with the medium of instruction. We want to give parity and bring equalization in terms of languages as subject options that are provided by schools. For example, if the school offers Afrikaans as additional language, it cannot offer Afrikaans at level 2 and offer isiXhosa or isiZulu at level 3. They must be treated equally. And that is the essence of the Nkosi case. So we are capturing the sentiments echoed in that particular case. The other question that perhaps I needed to add on is the new roles, seemingly new roles of the principal. I would like to take this opportunity, Chairperson, to remind the House that principals are members of governing bodies. They are not separate entities from the governing bodies. And if we look at the current dispensation, in terms of Section 18, capital A, of the South African Schools Act, principals represent the head of department in execution of their duties in the governing body, or 16, I beg your pardon, 16, capital A. Therefore, the principal is not taking over the financial responsibility of the governing body, but has the duty now to report to his principal, to his master, which is the head of department of a particular province, in terms of what is happening relating or regarding the finances of that particular school. And this is also to address the challenges that we encountered as a department in the case of Skumbi versus the Department of Education Mpumalanga, where the Honorable Moseneke said to the department, principals are not accounting officers of schools, they are not responsible, the governing bodies are, and therefore you cannot charge the principal if there are financial irregularities. Now, if we bring that element of accountability, then we'll ensure that principals also take responsibility for what is happening without really taking away the powers of governing bodies in financial management of the school. Thank you.
think Steve dealt with clause 9. The next question was on the principal advice. Yeah, I think that one was dealt with.
Yeah.
And the difference between the current provision and the new proposal, I think that one is also more or less connected to that, and that was also answered. There was also a question, will there be conflict between a training body of a governing body association and department officials responsible for the training? There will be no conflict. The bill does not say that, that does not abdicate the responsibility of the department with regard to training of governing bodies. This just gives the head of department further options where you can then engage governing body associations to also provide training, but also other appropriate training authorities. So it's not saying that we as a department, we're not going to provide a training. It just gives further options in law to the governing body associations. Then there was also a question on reimbursements of loans. I think that it deals with clause 12. The purpose and the link between that particular provision and clause 9. The purpose of this is to protect the interest of government. What it's saying here is that SGB cannot just go to a financial institution and apply for a loan, which they have done in the past. What does this give the MEC and the head of department greater control over the affairs of the school? So, and you must also link this with the new definition of loan. So this does not just include a normal loan like you know, where you go to a bank and say, I want to borrow, what, 50,000, whatever. It includes all credit agreements. So if the school goes to a company and take out a contract for the leasing of, say, what, 12 computers on a lease agreement or credit agreement, this will be covered by the definition of loan and this particular section. And it's also to ensure that the schools don't overburden themselves financially and to have the checks and balances in place. Furthermore, there's a further safeguard of also getting the permission of the MEC for finances. This is just also further to bring that particular person in place because it's got that financial implications. We had a case in the Northwest where a school entered into an agreement, lease agreement, with a company. And in the end, that school defaulted on the contract and it ran over R1 million. Now, clearly, there was no, because that is not covered by the definition of loan, that particular financial agreement. Now, if you had this particular provision in law, then the MEC would have approved that transaction, and that school would first have to get the permission of the MEC for that particular transaction. This is just also just to further greater safeguards for the state, because at the end of the day, the state will be responsible in terms of Section 16 of South African Schools Act if a school defaults on its on a contract, because that provision makes the state liable for the school default in terms of a contract. So I think if you read all of these sections together, Section 12, the new Section 12, as well as the definition of loan, and you link it also with Section 60, then it brings that safeguard in the financial affairs of the school and also the safeguard for the state into play. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Yes, TG? Wait, just hold on for the teaching, eh? You just want to add on.
Thank you very much. I just want to add a few things, Honourable Chairperson, to what my colleagues have already indicated. Just with regard to the application for to the MEC for loans, this also allows the MEC to exercise his or her mind to assess the financial capacity of the school now and going forward to meet those obligations. So that minimizes the risk of defaulting. So if the school doesn't have that capacity through a rigorous assessment that is done, then obviously that permission to accept a loan or apply for a loan is declined. Furthermore, if despite the provisions that have now been clarified in the legislation, somebody goes ahead and contracts or enters into a loan agreement without seeking permission, that person can then be charged. So it opens up that option for charging because they've operated outside of the statute. Furthermore, in terms of your question about the PFMA and preventing people from applying, you will notice we've added here the MEC for finance, because any public entity or department in government that seeks to enter into any loan, you correct, cannot do so without the Minister of Finance agreeing to that. And we've put in here the MEC for finance so that that provision can be dealt with as well. But again, the assessment is made in terms of the capacity of that school to fail. The point Mr. Lakers touched on is important, because we need to protect the state in terms of its exposure to financial obligations. Also, we need to protect the state in terms of the Constitution, because if a creditor seeks to attach the assets of a school, we deprive those learners of schooling, and that is in contravention of the Constitution. So therefore, we've got to be quite hard on this matter. Then, ma'am, regarding the question of focus schools, your question was, how does it affect current schools? Mm-hmm. Now, current schools do offer, and some schools may have like a significant emphasis on drama, and that school can become a focus school. Now, a focus school would be, you have two examples. One is a school that has quite a bit of drama, but it does everything else as a general curriculum. But it deals with its learners and its feeder schools. A focus school is one that becomes like a school of excellence in drama. And children from surrounding areas who may want to excel in drama would actually come to that school. Now, the key difference we're introducing in legislation is that this piece will allow us to provide or determine different norms and standards for the funding of those focus schools as opposed to ordinary schools, so that we can then provide for that in the curriculum. The question of additional no-fee schools there, the question was whether provinces are operating outside of the law currently. Remember, we have norms and standards and policies on no-fee schools which are very clearly codified. The point always with norms and standards determined nationally is that they are minimum norms and standards. So provinces have the right to go beyond those. The point always with regard to legislation is that they must meet the minimum provision. In all these instances so far, provinces have exceeded the norms and standards for no-fee schools. They satisfied what has been nationally determined as no-fee schools, and they went beyond that. The gap, though, is that there wasn't a uniform way in terms of the law to deal with that discretion that they were applying. And here we're just clarifying that once you've allocated schools into the no-fee category in accordance with the national determination, you then got to go to the remaining schools, starting with the poorest of the remaining schools, to include them first into no-fee categories. That ensures that you can't then randomly choose a school at no-fee, and then there's another school that's been excluded which is poorer than the school you've included. So it's basically to bring about uniformity in that regard. Thank you very much, Honourable Shepherd.
Thanks a lot for that, Honourable Gina. Have you got a follow-up or a question?
It's a follow-up, Chair, on your question.
Fine.
On the issue of specialized focus schools, my follow-up, Chairperson, is, does it address the question of this category of learners who cannot progress on the curriculum that is there, like not the specialized schools as we have, but those learners who cannot go on with the curriculum that is there, but they want to focus on something that they want to focus on specialized areas like he can. Like arts, somehow in us and whatever. How do we balance that with these schools of skills that you always talk about when we come to this committee? Are they catered in that category that is being introduced there?
Thank you, Mr. Sam. You were the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. With regard to Clause 7, the suitable sanction by the MEC, Chairperson, whilst we appreciate what has been provided in the bill, I think I need to ask a question to the department in the line of asking whether it will not be proper in this case for the MEC to consult, you know, with the SGB, who in the first place made the sanction. You see, so that after consultation, that the MEC then, you know, ensure the implementation of the sanction. And then secondly, Chair, can we expect maybe clear definitions on the categories of schools? I'm sitting here now sort of confused, and maybe I should share my confusion. I think we have now a public ordinary school. Then we have a special school for special needs. Then we have a special school for learners with learning barriers. Then we have a special school, or whether it's a public ordinary school with a special focus. So in fact, I'm sitting with that confusion. Do we have four categories, or do we have three? And I've just mentioned the four in my reasoning. So can we have that clarity? Thank you.
House Honourable Skosana.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I'm still firm on the issue of conflict of interest. But what I will say or make it as an input is that as we go interacting with this bill, must look at that particular issue, the conflict of interest between the principal and the SGB on financial matters. Because at some stage you will find a conflict of interest between the two. We must make sure that as we go, we deal with this question thoroughly so that it cannot raise such questions that I'm talking about. And also this question of loans is crucial, but the manner they respond on it is good for under normal circumstances, but not in the situation where our schools are now. Because everybody needs money to develop the school now. They will write convincing facts to the MECs, and the MECs maybe allowing them to continue with that. But the problem is, when the reinvestment part of it is where a problem will lie. And also, it will make some schools at some stage to be attached. And I said there are certain legalities for those reinvestments that I'm talking about. We must also look at this issue thoroughly. As we go, we make sure that if there is something that needs to be added, we must add. If we want to subtract, we must subtract, but we must look at it very thoroughly. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for that, Honourable Skosana. And I think the department has to note what is being said by you, because it was a very good comment. Just answer the two questions and just speak to the law to commit yourself. Thank you.
I'll deal with a follow-up question that relates to the category of learners that cannot progress with the current curriculum, whether they also include it under the third category of schools dealing with specialized focus on talent, including sport. The understanding is that those learners that currently does have problems with disabilities are catered to them within, with the special schools of education needs. The third category, in my view, does not adequately address that specific issue that you're referring to. Those will specifically focus on a particular talent, for example, sport, drama, art, or whatever, and not necessarily those learners that have problems progressing with the curriculum. In terms of the White Paper 6, those learners must be addressed within the current education environment where they find them within public schools, and they need to be special for the attention for that particular learners in those schools. But it's not catered within the third category, the answer to your question. Then the question dealing with sanction by the MSC, whether the MSC should consult with the school governing body. Currently, within the current setup, the head of department does take into account the views of the school governing body. The same which I think would apply with regard to what was said in the decision of the head of department. We must remember this is an appeal against the decision of the head of department and not necessarily an appeal against the sanction that the school imposed. So if the head of department decides that he's going to expel, then the parent can appeal against, or the learner can appeal against that sanction of the head of department to the MEC. The MEC must take all the facts into account when that particular, when the MEC makes the decision. So, although there is no, it's not spelled out in the legislation, the MEC can also consult school governing bodies as well as the parents. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I'll deal with the remaining ones. Just to add perhaps to the first one by Honourable Member Gina on the school of skills and learners who may be struggling with the curriculum. Apart from these definitions, we to classify schools into different categories. We deal with those learners through two mechanisms. One is in terms of a full-service school, and there's policy catering for that. But also, we, in terms of funding norms that we're developing, we are able to fund learners depending on their curriculum needs. And we're trying to look at that policy area to cater for the kind of school of skills you're talking about. Because it allows us then to depart from the normal average funding of a learner to cater for the additional needs of those learners. So maybe it's something we must return to, because it's an important question the Honourable Member has raised there. In terms then of going now to Honourable Member Skosana's points, the one around the conflict of interest is definitely a matter one's got to keep on the radar screen. And it very often depends very much on conditions. In some instances, you find the SGB that's misbehaving, and you need the principal to keep the SGB in check. In other instances, you may find the principal misbehaving, and the SGB needs to keep the principal in check. God forbid we do have situations where both parties misbehave, and then we have a problem. But the purpose of this amendment is to try and provide a check and balance so that if the SGB is creating problems, the principal is there, you know, in loco to ensure that they exercise responsibilities in terms of the law on behalf of the head of department to keep things in check. They duly advise the SGB. If the SGB refuses to take that advice, action can be taken against the SGB. The other way around, there's general very good provisions for that, where a principal engages in financial misconduct, the SGB can charge that principal for financial misconduct. So this is basically trying to bring about their check and balance. On the other issue the Honourable Members raised, Skosana, there's a big social issue we have in the country. And what we're saying here is that a school must demonstrate capacity to repay the loan. So the MEC can take only this criterion into account. That is it a credible application? In other words, the money going to be used for something credible? And then linked to that criterion, does the school have the capacity to pay it back? That's important.
The MEC cannot decide because of the compelling need or poverty of the school to approve a loan. So no matter what case the school puts forward to say, look, we're really in dire straits, the MEC can't decide on that. So in other words, the loan is not a way of financing the school out of its conditions of poverty. That is the funding mechanism that's supposed to do that. So the provisions and guidelines that the MEC is supposed to use here are quite clear. If the MEC approves or grants permission for that school to take out a loan without exercising due judgment, required judgment, over the capacity of that school to repay, then the MEC hasn't exercised the responsibility that's expected. So again, I think it's an important point, but just to say that's the safety valve in terms of how this thing will have to be considered. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
And the question of Mr. Smiles, he spoke about four categories, but according to Section 8, the amendment, there are three just answering, even if you're repeating Section 8. Thank you.
Currently, in terms of legislation, there are only two categories of school. A public school may consist of an ordinary public school or a public school for learners with special education needs. That's in terms of SASA. That's the only categories of schools recognized in terms of the law. The third one is added now in this bill, and that is public schools that that provides education for specialized focus on talent. So I know that, you know, sometimes we speak of more than one school, but in terms of law, only those two categories are currently recognized in terms of South African Schools Act. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Lekas. I think I'm going to end this briefing. But before I end the briefing, I'd like to thank you. Of course, you spoke to the skills, you know, having another separate category when it comes to skills itself. Because I was wondering what happened to those children. Because when you look at the FET colleges, you know, it's on a very high standard. And our learners, when you send them after grade 9 to FET colleges, they don't get through. Then we throw so easily around, inclusive education when it comes to White Paper 6. And I think the department had to make a concerted effort to go into it, because I remember we visited schools when it comes to inclusive education, and our teachers are not trained, the classes are too big, the children fall through that safety net that we're trying to provide. So I think we can have a look at that too. And looking at the way forward, because we still got something else to discuss, do members want public hearings on this amendment? When I spoke to the chairperson of chairpersons, he said when it comes to education, try to have public hearings. It's up to learners, students, it's up to the honourable members now. Thank you. Yes. It's very important to give a response that we can write it down. Thank you. Honourable Kosana?
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I should think we must have public hearings on these matters so the public can hear very well and when times comes, make an input after we've explained everything. I should think it's very important. I do support your idea.
Thanks for that. And it is seconded. Yes, Honourable Director.
Yes, to support that.
Yeah. Yes, Dr. James. Honourable James.
We actually have no difficulty with the bill as it is right now. And also there's been a variety of submissions and the submissions have been included. But at the same time, given that it is education, we would support the idea of having public hearings if the public hearings do not, in terms of the scheduling, compromise progress on the ball. So if it's organized properly and quite directed, I think that will serve that purpose. But the principle, yes.
Thanks for that. Yes, we received quite a number of inputs, and I think we'll choose who will ask to come. But the inputs that I don't see here is from there's one union only. SATU didn't give an input, and NAPTAUSA didn't give an input. And then I see the Federation of School Governing Bodies here, because we regard them as important. I would like to ask the department, when do you want this bill to be completed, rounded up? Thank you. Because it will help us with our public hearings.
Honourable Chairperson, we subject ourselves to the processes in Parliament, but ideally in terms of our needs, end of March would be a good target for us, yeah.
Thanks a lot for that, because then we can do it and then send it through to NCLP. Thank you. Llewellyn, you have just welcomed the public hearings, please. I'll give you a date. Yes?
Supporting what was said, my thought was really just around us being a people's parliament and our responsibility in terms of helping people to feel connected to the. So if the main thing would be, I know we've had some submissions, but we would need to re-advertise where we feel we're reaching schools, everywhere, masses, parents, whatever. So we just, because we're going to have fingers pointed at us if we don't make sure that we broadly opening the subject for discussion. It doesn't matter if no one responds, but we need to make sure we've opened it broadly.
I think it was opened broadly, because we do have, like, you know, from one SGB, then we have all the SGBs of South Africa, you know, that with one input. And I think what will be important, because you can, there's unions, invite the unions, again, the SGB body, and then a few others. Thank you. On Pochina?
I just wanted to advise that let us not discuss the logistics of the public hearings. The Secretary and the Chair are going to deal with all the processes the way you are expected to do that. So let us not discuss it here.
Thanks a lot for that. She's my whip, and thanks for that. Let's go to... let's go to the next item on the agenda. We are not going into quality education because we're going to do it ourselves as a committee. But we have a matter of public importance that the DA would like to bring up, and that is on temporary teachers. We're going to listen to it, and then we're going to ask the department to give us a reply. Mr. Smiles?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. As you correctly said, it's a matter of public importance. It's also a matter for the whole South Africa to be mindful and to care for the Eastern Cape. As you know, it's now not an open secret that the Eastern Cape...
Mr. Smiles, just be brief.
Yes.
Because what I'm doing now, I'm giving you a chance to speak to this,
yes.
But you are preempting... a report.
Okay,
so just be brief.
I will.
And state your case on this. And don't speak to the Eastern Cape. Speak to the school, please. Thank you.
The non-appointment of temporary educators is the problem. And that's why you have that correspondence chairperson in your hand. Coming from a school in the rural Eastern Cape near the Gariep Dam, Venterstad. Now, this morning, the parents arrived at the school and closed down the school and take all children out of the schoolyard and say, come home, because 111 grade 1, 2, and 3 learners are without teachers. And according to the information that I have, is last year, those teachers or those classes had temporary teachers. Now we have a situation where the principal is saying that when she shifts down other teachers to the feet, it's like a small blanket in winter. You want to close your feet and your shoulders and your head is open and you're getting cold there. Now the problem is not only with Venterstad, it's in the rural area as well. and people or parents are coming up against the department, and there are protests like closing down schools. I'm not supportive to that kind of action because I say learners must remain in school. That's a point that I want to make clearly. Now, Chairperson, it is happening in the northern areas.
I didn't ask you to discuss the northern areas of Port Elizabeth. The only thing I gave you was the school.
Now, Chairperson.
No, Mr. Smiles. I said the school. Don't put in things extra. Speak to the school, please.
Yes. The same is happening with the northern areas and
Fenterstad. I didn't say speak to the northern areas. Speak to Fenterstad, please.
I'm just referring
to... But you are preempting a report. Or
okay.
Else I'm not going to ask the department to answer to this. Thank you.
Chairperson, well, I just want to say that the department is owing this school more than 150,000 rand. From last year's allocation, which they didn't receive. I've raised this matter last year. The department did pay some of the money, but still more than 150,000 is outstanding. Now, why I'm raising this? It's the SGB's position and that of the school principal to say, we will take that money that's outstanding and appoint teachers with that kind of money. Money that should actually go to books, to paying electricity, but they say we cannot allow a situation where the learners is without teachers. So, Chairperson, I think as a national department, the national department should go to the SG of the province and to say they must appoint temporary teachers. We cannot violate the right to education of the learners in the Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Smiles. I think this topic on temporary teachers is rather important. But I would like the SG schools, okay, we had a visit to the Eastern Cape as part of the committee. All right, sorry. Yes, sir?
Chair, before you do that, may I beg your indulgence because what is happening is unprecedented in this committee, that we introduce subject of, what did you call it, of public interest. For instance, from the IFP side, we have issued just today a statement on what is happening in the Eastern Cape. Perhaps through our ignorance of procedures, I should have brought this to here, but this is not what we have done in the past, opening a space for political parties to bring in matters of public interest. Then, if that's the case, can parties also be given a slot to state their views on this matter? Thank you.
Then I'll close the matter, and we're not discussing it, and in this letter, they can take to NCLP. Sorry about that, Nick. Okay. Yes, Honourable.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I need an advice from you as Chairperson, maybe about this matter, this matters. I don't think it's proper for us as a committee to discuss this administrative matters that need an attention of the department. It's better if the honourable member submitted that query or that problem to the administrator, in fact to the department, so that the department can process it and make follow-ups and so on. Because we've got lots of issues from our provinces, but we cannot bring them here. We're processing them through administration bit by bit so that we can see that those problems are addressed. Can you maybe guide us correctly so that cannot entertain such issues now. Yeah. Thank you.
Chair, like I said earlier that I'm seated on the side of the department. Mm. I get ignored for that. but perhaps it's my fault. It can't be yours, I think.
because members are concentrated on the other side. But I thought you would close the matter without further discussions, and we should stick to the procedure in terms of how issues get introduced here, because at the end it will be difficult for you to determine in a meeting of this nature. Because all issues, in my view, will be matters of public interest. I don't think we sit here and there's some issues which can't be of matters of public interest. All of those will happen to be like that. And my view is that even if there's a matter that is an urgent one, even the department or any institution that must respond to that must come here ready. They must come with information. So it's not like you must hijack people who come to us and are supposed to give clarity on certain issues. They should stick to what they came here for, and we should tell them in advance what is our expectation and so on. Yes, here and there will be issues related to what is being discussed, which will crop up. But we can introduce issues, deeming as they are, in this particular manner. I mean, to me, it may not be very acceptable. Hence, it was said that it's unprecedented in this committee, and I just think that we must stick to how we handle issues. I don't think there's any wrong thing in how we used to handle these matters in this committee. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for that. And we're closing the matter, and we're going on with the meeting. Thank you. Anything the department would like to say?
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. We'd just like to thank you and Honourable Members for this opportunity. Thank you.
I'm releasing the department now, and we're going on with our meeting. Thank you. You can have tea outside and come back again. Thanks. And thank you, my Whipney, for the letter.